the Israeli regime, its existence is detrimental to the interests of the United States. It's a burden to the United States. Some may ask, why doesn't Iran strike the Israeli regime now? I think there are three reasons for that. One is that this war is about the Strait of Hormuz, and Iran wants to focus on the Strait and to make sure that the United States fails. The second reason is that the second point is that Iran never initiates war. It doesn't, even though many people attack Iran, even Iranian supporters online attack Iran, say, you should have a nuclear weapon, you're foolish, you're stupid, you should, you know, start the war, you're being idiots, they're going to destroy you. I hear that a lot, and from people who are really sincerely supporting Iran from across the globe. But Iran does not start wars. That's just how it is. It's their religious belief, and they won't do it. But there's a third reason, too, and that is that the Israeli regime is in crisis. There is internal crisis, and there's election coming on. And the crisis is bigger than what many of us seem to think. I read some of the material in Conflicts Forum that they produce by Alistair Crook's wife, Aisling, about internal, what she translates and puts out material on Hebrew from the Hebrew press in the Israeli regime. And the divisions are very deep and dangerous. So right now, the Iranians are just watching and waiting and looking at the situation inside the regime. And it would prefer not to do something that would unite the different political forces behind Netanyahu right now. They'd like to see these clashes continue. But if Netanyahu and his coalition fire a missile at Iran, then there will be war and Iran will hit back very hard. But in any case, Iran is preparing the grounds for war because they are destroying all those radar installations and all those assets that are there to protect the Israeli regime, as well as the United States forces.
Now, there has, speaking of these Israel, there has been some reporting here of late where some of the statements made by some of the senior Israeli leaders, Benjamin Netanyahu being one of them, that imply that if Iran does go back and start striking Iran, that they would hit them in ways harder before, giving the implication it could be a nuclear weapon. Is there any concern on the Iranian side that they may one day be the recipient of an Iranian Israeli nuclear weapon?
Well, first of all, he said this before on many occasions. But first of all, the very fact that he says this sort of thing, I think just exposes the Israeli regime further in the eyes of humanity for what it really is. But also, I don't think that the Israeli regime would survive such an attack. First of all, the world won't accept it. And the regime is already despised and it is hated across the world. And so that's one issue. The second is that Iran is a very big country. And Iran has no plans to produce nuclear weapons. In the 1980s, when the United States supported Saddam Hussein and the West gave him chemical weapons to use against Iranians, and as I may have said on your show, I survived two chemical attacks myself. I survived a nerve agent in the Khaybar operation, and I survived mustard gas in 1988. So I know these things a bit, you know, firsthand. Iranian leaders and politicians went to the leader, Ayatollah Khomeini, back then and said, we need chemical weapons. And the West was preventing Iran from even purchasing gas masks. So Ayatollah Khomeini said, no, this is an inhumane weapon and you're not allowed to make it. And you have to fight the war without it. This idea continued under Ayatollah Khamenei. He gave a fatwa, as we all know. And there's no evidence that Iran has ever, I mean, the IAEA has never produced any evidence that Iran was ever producing a nuclear weapon. And the United States admits that at least since 2003, Iran has not been attempting to build a nuclear weapon. Before 2003, it wasn't either, but that's another. And there's a good book on this, by the way. There are two good books. One is called Manufactured Crisis by Gareth Porter, and another is A Dangerous Delusion.
Gareth, good friend of mine.
Yeah, an excellent guy. And another is A Dangerous Delusion by Peter Oborn, who's British, alongside the two books that I once mentioned on your show, Going to Tehran by the Leverets and the resistance by our mutual friend Alistair Crook. So the Iranians were not producing a nuclear weapon, but the Dr. Larijani, who was martyred in this war, who was the chair of the Supreme National Security Council, once said, not when he was the chair of the council, but when he was a representative of the leader, he said that if there's, I'm paraphrasing, I may have forgotten exactly what he said, but he said that if there is an imminent threat to Iran's existence, Iran's nuclear posture would change. And Dr. Kharazi, who was a foreign minister under President Khatami, he too said the same thing. He was also murdered in the war by the Americans and Israelis. So I would assume that if there is an imminent threat, that what a credible nuclear threat against Iran would be considered an imminent threat. And as I said, Iran has many capabilities. It's highly advanced. We're seeing that in this war. It chooses not to have a nuclear weapon. But if there's going to be a threat to its existence, then I think things could change. I don't know if I was disconnected or not because I lost your image.
No, you're very good. No, we just sometimes want to focus on you. What is the effect so far? Yesterday on Fox News yesterday, Scott Bessent said that the sanctions are having a crippling effect on the Iranian economy, that inflation is up 180%, store shelves are empty, people are losing their jobs, and it is starting to really bite across the ground. What is the truth on the ground there?
Well, you know, that's what they've been saying since I was a teenager, that Iran is always falling apart, it's collapsing. The regime, they love to say regime, the regime is on the verge of collapse. It's highly unpopular. They're incapable of self-governance. But, you know, this evil regime won't go away. And it's still here. And you have all these millions of evil people on the streets, you know, mourning for the leader and mourning for the children who were murdered. I mean, they live in their alternative universe. Yes, of course. When you impose a siege, when you bomb factories and schools and hospitals and apartment blocks, and you impose sanctions, of course life is going to be more difficult. But the Iranians are going to be resilient and resistant. It's, you know, this is a country with thousands of years of civilization, and its Shia religious identity, as Alistair Crook explains in his book Resistance quite well. It makes it particularly strong when opposing oppression, uniquely strong. That's what we see in Lebanon, that's what we see in Iran, that's what we see in Yemen, and across the board with the resistance. So, the United States is not going to win this war, come what may. But it was after the United States imposed maximum pressure sanctions, after it murdered the leader, after they imposed after last year's war, 12-day war, after all this, we saw the funerals in Tehran, in the holy cities of Mashhad and Qom, and in the holy cities of Najaf and Karbala in Iraq. The United States is failing. Now, these people can pretend all they want that they're winning, just like the Secretary of War has destroyed all of our missiles. But at the end of the day, reality keeps hitting them in the head, and they don't seem to recognize that what's hitting them in the head is reality.
Right. Yeah. And that's going to continue on. One last thing I want to ask you about, which you just mentioned, Iraq there. Was on Fox News last night on the Jesse Waters show. He had this comment that, you know what, the oil situation is really starting to kick in now. The United States is, he claims they're going to open up the Strait of Hormuz. We'll leave that aside for the moment. But he said, listen, we just signed a bunch of deals with Iraq to get to two separate oil packages to have a new pipeline that's going to bypass the Strait of Hormuz and another one that's going to allow some new drilling, I think, by Chevron, if I'm not mistaken, whichever it was, a couple of different oil companies. But I also remember when President Trump hosted the Iraqi prime minister, is that part of the deal was the removal of the United States Armed Forces. And I understand that either it already has happened or it's about to happen, where that same prime minister is going to Tehran to maybe have some more deals. What can you tell us about the reality of the current relationship with Iran and oil?
The reality is that if they want to develop pipelines, it will take years. But even if they do develop pipelines, if Iran doesn't want that oil exported, they can bomb the source of that oil. And the United States is very unpopular in Iraq anyway. So the Iraqi people despise the United States. There is a minority in the north among the Kurdish groups and in the west that support the United States, but most Iraqis don't. There are a number of reasons for this. One is that Iraq, when it exports its oil, it has to go to a bank in the United States. And the United States tells the Iraqi government whether it can have its money or not. They spoon feed the Iraqi government with its own money. What does Iran do? Iran, when it has extra gas and when it has extra electricity, I don't know if it has extra now because of the war, it exports it to Iraq. Because of the U.S. sanctions, the Iraqi government is not allowed to pay Iran for its oil, for its gas, and its electricity. But Ayatollah Khamenei, the martyr Ayatollah Khamenei, has always told different governments, leave it alone. Let them have the gas and oil, the gas and electricity, because the people of Iraq need it. They have a shortage of electricity and gas. So Iran, which is under maximum pressure sanctions by the United States, gives effectively free electricity and gas to Iraq to help the Iraqi people. And the Americans strangle the Iraqis and say, you do as we say, otherwise you do not get your oil well. Who is going to be popular? And who is going to last in the long run? And who is Iraq's neighbor? So they can sign all the agreements that they want for 10 years down the road. But, by then, I think we're going to be living in a very different world.
Yeah, well, I worry about that day, what it's going to look like for the entire region, as well as the global economy. Last question I want to ask you is something that I have seen. It's a little bit more on the margins, but I just wonder if you have any thoughts on the matter. There has been some arguments here of late, and it's been both in some media in the West, as well as some out of Russia and out of the Middle East. And that is, if the war goes south, and especially if it goes back into a full-scale war where it's both sides against the other, and Iran really unleashes its missile forces and starts to degrade, like this desalination plants, like the energy infrastructure, because if we hit theirs, and of course they'll do as you suggested here, that there is the possibility that Iran could then mobilize ground forces to actually move into some areas like Kuwait and others and actually seize control of some of those oil fields. Is that just crazy talk, or is there any genuine consideration of that?
Actually, I think what is more imminent is the possibility that Yemen could enter Saudi Arabia, first of all, destroy their oil facilities, and then enter Saudi Arabia. They have a huge army. And the Saudis are very vulnerable, and now their export wealth they can't use the Strait of Hormuz and they can't use the Bab al-Mandab, and it's not just about oil, it's all goods. So the Saudis are in big trouble. Then you have the resistance in Iraq. The resistance in Iraq is larger than Hezbollah with all of its reserve forces. So you have in Iraq maybe 150,000, 200,000 people who are affiliated to the resistance, and they are.
And when you say resistance, you mean Iranian resistance?
Yes, supportive of the Iranians, those who during the 40 days of fighting were firing at U.S. bases, but the resistance hadn't gone up very high on the escalation ladder. So there is always restraint, as there is now. But if there is all-out war, that's the scenario you're discussing. If there is all-out war, then the Iraqi resistance itself can take Kuwait easily. And if the Iraqis take Kuwait and want it for themselves, I'm pretty sure that the Iranians will be very fine. They'll be quite fine with that.
And could this Iraqi resistance operate without the willingness or even participation of the Iraqi or the actual ISF, the Iraqi security forces?
Iraq is very complicated. Their relationship is quite good. And as I said, Iraqis, we saw the funeral of Ayatollah Khamenei in Najaf and Karbala. Iraqis, you know, their relationship with Iran is very good. Their anger towards the United States is clear as day. So they're not going to be fighting against each other. This is something that the Americans don't, you know, the American government doesn't understand. Iraq, which is a major country, opposes the United States. Yemen opposes the United States. Who are the U.S. allies? Kuwait, Qatar, the Emirates. I mean, these are not, they produce oil and gas, but they're not powers. They may have a lot of money in the bank, but they don't have a real military. And we saw Saudi Arabia fight against Yemen, Saudi Arabia and the Emirates together fight against Yemen with all their the tens of thousands of mercenary forces that they paid for to fight against Yemen, and ultimately they failed. And the United States is not popular right now. If people went online, when you look at the comment sections in Arabic media, people across the region in the Arab world are supporting Iran, not the United States. So this is not a war that I think, I don't see any scenario where the United States wins. And it could be, it could go south, as you said. It could end, it will still be bad. All the scenarios are go south.
Right.
But in some terribly, you know, bad south, some less so. In no scenario can I envisage a situation where the United States does not lose.
Yeah, and I'll just tell you this, if the scenario that you posited there with the Iraqi security forces and what the Yemenis, the Houthis armed forces, Ansar Allah may do to Saudi Arabia down there, this wouldn't be like 1991 when Saddam Hussein took over Kuwait. The U.S. armed forces that exist back then doesn't exist right now. And we could not go in and just expel them because we don't have the ground forces for it. Or any, now we don't even have the resources and the bases, and we would never be able to land like my forces did. I came in with the U.S. 2nd Cavalry and landed at Jabal in Saudi Arabia and had the ease of getting everything off the boards and everything, and then moving in to take off the Republican Guards. That would never happen now. So if that scenario happens, if we get foolish and start to this war and it turns into a ground fight, no one's going to be able to save Kuwait this time. So let's just hope that we don't get to that.
Or Saudi Arabia. If Yemen moves in, if Iraq moves, I mean, Saudi won't last. If the United States starts targeting Iran's critical infrastructure, I think all these regimes will collapse anyway.
God help us if we get into that, because that would almost certainly thrust us into a Great Depression. Almost how could it not, because of the disruption of energy supplies. Let's hope we don't get into that, that somehow sanity prevails and we can at least end this on a bad situation and not a catastrophic one. But we thank you so much for coming on today and providing this clarity. It's what a lot of people don't want to hear, but it's the reality, and that's what we need a lot of right now. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. I don't take any pleasure in saying this sort of thing, but I think I have to say it because people have to know what Fox News and what MSNBC and CNN and at the BBC and so on are not saying.
Indeed, that's exactly why we have this channel. So thank you. And we appreciate you guys. Be back in about 2.5 minutes. Larry Johnson is going to be on to give his take on a lot of the things that we're talking about here today, but as well as things going on in the Russia-Ukraine war. You always want to see Larry the Shirt Johnson. You will be pleased in about 2 minutes from now. See you then. You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe, hit that like button, and share this with somebody you love.